सहर ने जो मुस्कुरा के देखा। सलवा
Assalamu alaikum, brothers and sisters. Just a couple of announcements. Inshallah, we will be having programs here at Sabah from Thursday to Saturday every week, for every weekend up until Eid al-Zahra. So please encourage you guys all to come. Next week, we'll have one more program here tomorrow with Malana Beg, and then from next week we'll have parallel programming once again. We still have children's programs going on parallel to this program. We have three sets of programs. We have one for ages 5 to 9, 9 to plus, and 3 to 5. The locations have changed, so there's 5 to 9 is in the children's program room across from the women's bathroom. The 9 plus is in the academy classroom, and which is on the other building. And then the child care is on the Rise Academy side. So if you need help taking your children there, don't know where it is, please, Flagazan will help you, will direct you to where you need to go. And please help me invite up our speaker that we've had. There are a set of Toyota keys that have been lost. If anyone finds it, please bring them up to the minbar so we can get to the rightful owner, inshallah. And with that, please help me invite up our speaker, Maulana Beg, with a lot salawat. Can I ask everyone to please also move forward a little bit? We're not that many people. We don't need to sit this that far apart from each other, inshallah. Please help move out with lat salawat.
حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير اعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاه والسلام على اشرف الانبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا ابي القاسم محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين سيما بقية الله العظم روحي وأرواح العالمين له الفداء رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقهوا قولي. There's a question mark of how our ending is going to be in our life. Whether we are going to die as a Muslim or whether we are going to die as a kafir. What will be your ending? That's a question mark in our life. And if this doesn't scare you, well, it should. A man who had fear in his face. If you can lower the echo. One of me is enough. A man who had fear in his face, his face was pale with fear, real fear, appeared before Rasulullah. And when the Prophet saw him, in his real, someone who's actually afraid of something, as if something is really going to happen. So the Prophet asked him, "What are you afraid of? Why are you so fearful?" And his reply was, I really fear Allah. I fear Allah. And he wasn't lying. He was speaking the truth. You might see some people who actually are afraid of Allah and they fear Allah. You'll see that their face has turned pale. They really are looking as if Something heavy is going to happen to them. Something hard is going to happen to them. As if they have been to a enormous tragedy. You might see such people. This person had that fear in front of the Prophet. The Prophet asked him, "What are you afraid of?" He says, "I fear Allah." He says, "Why? Why do you fear Allah for?" He says, I mean, then the Prophet, because he didn't know how to answer that. When he heard the Prophet say that, he said, "Why? Why do you fear Allah?" He says, "Did you do something wrong? Did you do something wrong? If you did, just don't do it. You don't need to fear him. He is not an oppressor or a tyrant that you need to be afraid of. He is not going to be unfair with you. Why are you afraid of him? There's no need to be afraid of Allah. Really, Allah is very loving. He's very kind. Why are you afraid of him like that? You're making the other people scared." A lot of times you see people like that happen. And this person started thinking. And then the Prophet said, "However, if you are afraid that your ending will be bad, that your ending will be sad, that you will end up in hell, if you're afraid of your ending, then yes, you should fear that." My friend, we shouldn't be fearing Allah. We shouldn't be afraid of Allah. Be afraid that your ending will be wrong, that you'll end in the wrong place. That is something to fear, and that fear is healthy. Allah wanted you to fear that. That's why He kept your hereafter as a question mark and said, "Really, do you know where you're going to end up? Are you sure you're going to end up in the right place, or are you going to end up in the wrong place?" Allah didn't even give you a hint. He didn't even give you any idea where you're going to end up. And then the examples that He gave you in history are such that when you look at them, it creates more fear inside of you. Because you had people who were good, not only good, they were great. They were respectable people, good people, mu'min people, believing people, loving the Ahlul Bayt people, who ended up going to hell. And that created more fear in you. And Allah wanted you to have this fear. And He wanted you to see two things in religion, two things in your journey towards Allah that you need to be careful about and that you need to focus on. That is the pitfalls that take you to hell and the surges that take you to heaven. Two things He wanted you to concentrate on. And say that, you know what? What are those things that if I have those things that are going to destroy me, that are going to pull me down and make me an enemy of Imam Hussein? And trust me, anyone can turn out to be like that. There is no surety of anything. And then when we'll go through the list of pitfalls, you will understand why. At least we should know what are those pitfalls. What is it in me that can take me down and make me an enemy of Imam Ali? That can make me an enemy of Ahlul Bayt? What are those things? We need to have a list of those things. We need to know what those things are. And then what are the things that can make our faith rise, make us stronger, make us a true lover of Ahlul Bayt? What are those things also? We need to see that also. But because we only have one more speech, I'm just going to go through the pitfalls, right? The surges, sometime else, right? We'll discuss that. But just the pitfalls, where are those things? Like, it's like a minefield. If you know that there's a minefield and you walk on that minefield, one wrong step is going to blow you up, is going to destroy you. Now imagine how careful you need to be, knowing that, you know what, in this path towards Akhirat, in this path towards Imam Hussein, these are the pitfalls, and if I step on any one of them, it's going to destroy me. That's what we want to learn, and that's where we are. And just let me go forward just by saying, as an introduction, one of the things, the effect that these have, knowing that there are pitfalls, that this have on us, is something I want to talk about for 1-2 minutes. Send us salawats. You know what this topic does in religion? This is in religion. Allah spoke about it in the Quran. I gave those ayat yesterday so that you know how the discussion begins. Now what happens is that, what happens knowing that there are pitfalls and knowing that there are surges that can either bring and take us down or bring us up? What happens? Well, there are two specific effects on two specific group of people. Those people who are good, mu'min, practicing people, really good people, mashallah, like yourself, when you know that you can fall down anytime and that anything can take you down, the thing that it makes you or helps you is that it makes sure that you don't become arrogant or proud. Pride is the number one killer for believers. It is the number one pitfall for believers. And for those who don't practice, when you know that there are opportunities that all of a sudden you can become a companion of Imam Hussein, and the examples are there. Karbala is filled with those examples of people that you did not expect them to be with Imam Hussein, and they ended up being with Imam Hussein and dying with Imam Hussein, and they became examples for the rest of humanity. Look at those people. A point in case, Zuhair ibn Qain. This person was never expected to be with Imam Hussein. He never expected. He was a Shia of Uthman. He was a businessman who had nothing to do with Ahlul Bayt. Lived all his life from the family of Bani Umayyah. Lived all his life there. He really had nothing to do with Imam Hussein. And all of a sudden, overnight, in one meeting he had, in fact, he was running away from Imam Hussein. Everywhere Imam Hussein wanted to meet him, he was avoiding him. He did not want to answer Imam Hussein. And then that one time that he met Imam Hussein, all of a sudden everything changed. And you're like, what happened here? How did this person go from not being a helper or not even coming close to Imam Hussein to being someone who dies with Imam Hussein? What was it? You know what this does to us? Anyone who's not practicing or, you know, does haram or whatever it does, what it does is that it creates hope in you. Hope that, you know what, I still have hope. I still have hope. At least don't lose hope. You know, really, it makes you not lose hope. Saying that, you know, there's still a chance for me. These two things are the effects that this topic has on people, these two specific groups of people. People who are religious, they realize that they cannot be proud. And people who are not religious can realize that they can still have hope. And this is why Allah wanted this subject to be hanging in the air in everyone's life. And we are all going through it. That's why if you read the hadiths on the sermons of our imams, you will see they constantly ask this question. Do you know where your ending is going to be? Are you sure you're going to end in heaven? Are you sure you're going to be doing this? Certain ideas that we have. Yes, we do majalis. Yes, we cry for Imam Hussein. Yes, we do all of that. But as I said, I mentioned yesterday, right? That there's a way of testing yourself to make sure that these majalis and the crying is really increasing our love and not something that we are hiding within ourselves. That's something that we all have to look at, but still, there's a question mark. And that should be motivating us to become are to see and to focus on these things. So without any delay, let me go now dwell into the subject of pitfalls. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. One more salawat. My friends, these pitfalls that are there, just as an advice I'll give you and then we'll go through the list, right? Our job is to avoid pitfalls. How and what is the method of avoiding those pitfalls? I want to make us understand first. How do we avoid them? There is one general answer for that, that everyone can understand and know, and pretty much I want you all to really start to think about this. There's one way to avoid pitfalls, one way to make sure that we do not fall down and destroy ourselves. One certain for sure short way that we can do that, and I'll give you that answer right now. Right? I won't wait for it tomorrow. This was supposed to come tomorrow at the end, but I said, you know, let me give it right now, because who knows what will happen tonight. You know, who knows what will happen tonight. You know, let me just do it right now. So if anyone wants to get it done tonight, they can get it tonight, right? So inshallah, let's work on that. What is that one way that we can avoid pitfalls, that we can make sure that we do not fall down? And this is really important. The one way that we can make sure of that is that make your relationship with Allah transparent. Think about it. You know, I told you yesterday that we are very complicated people. We have a lot of complexes. We have a lot of phobias. We hide ourselves behind so many curtains. We don't reveal ourselves to others. In fact, we are so used to hiding our weaknesses and our defects that any sort of hint of our weakness that goes out to the people puts us to shame. We are so ashamed of even the smallest sort of idea that goes out to the people that would put a, you can say, bad notion about us. Anything on the internet, you know, something like that. Imagine this. Let's say your kid posted a picture of you on the internet. And imagine that, you know, I mean, just the shame. It just comes out. This human psychology, what is it doing? It's hiding things deep inside so no one can look at me. I want to hide myself. Really, living in a healthy society, you get more exposure to people and you're more exposed so that you can actually deal with yourself. But living in an unhealthy society that we're living in, it gives us all the places to hide ourselves, to live a private life that no one can even look at you, or you become exposed to them in such a way that it becomes easy for us to hide our real self and not show anyone. And if our real self never comes out, you can never deal with it. You will never deal with it in your life, and you still remain, whatever ugliness is inside of you, it remains until we die. And when it dies, it does come out. It's going to get pretty ugly there. Better thing is what? That this comes out. In fact, it is said that when Allah likes someone, when Allah loves someone, basarahu uyuban, He exposes His defects to him. He reveals it to them. He says, you see how ugly you are? He tells it to them that when we learn that, this is Allah loving us. Now that I know I am ugly, I can deal with it. I can start to work with it. If I don't know that, if I'm hiding it to such an extent that even I don't know I have this defect, then you know what? How am I ever going to deal with it? Allah, one of the du'as you should be making to Allah, Allah, expose my defects to me. Expose them to me so that I can deal with it. Expose my weaknesses so I can deal with it. If you don't expose it, I'm going to die. Really, it's going to be sad for me. This is why, when you look at your relationship with Allah, you see, is it transparent? Are you honest with Allah? Are you clean with Allah? Are you saying to Allah that this is who I am, you know me? If you look at the relationship Ahlul Bayt had with Allah, this is what you find in them. Read the dua al-Arafat of Imam Hussein. When you read that dua, what is Imam Hussein saying? He lays it out in front of Allah. He says, this is who I am. I am exposed in front of you. And I know that you know me inside out. There's nothing to hide between you and me. This is me. Now I am at your mercy. Really, I'm at your mercy. When you listen to that dua that Imam Hussein is making, and you see, wow, that's me talking to Allah. I should be saying that to Allah. Allah, I'm exposed. What is there to hide? There's nothing to hide. Let me be transparent now. Let me be open now. Let me be outward now with you. There's nothing to hide from me. This is the number one thing. And how does that work? Let me give you the mechanism of how it works. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. You know, when you deal with Allah, do not put any condition, stipulation, or any kind of restriction in your service to Allah. You can't say to Allah that, Allah, you know, I will worship you if you take care of this. Or, Allah, you know what? Here's the deal, you know. I'll do this for you, but are you doing it, you know? What are you doing for me? I mean, you can't put any restrictions there. You got to be clean with Allah. This is in your heart. You got to be clean with Allah when you are doing service to Allah. And how does it expose itself? Well, the reason is this, my friends. You see, have you ever dealt with an arrogant person? You know, you'll see, I mean, you know, it might be your boss, it might be a spouse, you know, it could be anyone, right? Deal with an arrogant person, you know, I mean, anyone you'll see, anyone who's arrogant, you'll see that, it's a little bit complicated. I mean, when a person is humble, when a person has humility, it's easy to deal with them, right? You know, you're able to talk to them and this and that because I'm the arrogant one here. Right? And that guy is the humble one. But when you deal with someone who's arrogant, it's a little bit complicated. My friends, Allah is arrogant. He is mutakabbir. What does that mean? Allah knows that He is great and He regards Himself as great. He knows it. Allah is mutakabbir. Al-mutakabbir. He is arrogant. He has the right to be arrogant. Only He deserves to be arrogant. It looks beautiful on Him. Everyone else who's arrogant, this is an ugliness. You're ugly when you're arrogant. This quality only looks beautiful on Allah. Because He is great. He is great. And He knows that He's great. And He regards Himself as great. That's what we declare when we say Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar, which is the heart of prayer, which is the basis of prayer. The signal for you entering prayer is Takbir, Allahu Akbar. What does that mean? The first thing you're declaring is that Allah, you are great. You are the greatest. You are the highest. You are. I'm not regarding you as that. I'm not imagining you as that. But I know it's a reality. You are great. When Allah is Akbar, and Allah knows that He's Akbar, Allah knows that He's great, and He is, then how do you deal with someone like that? Now friends, when you deal with an arrogant person, let's say, other than Allah, when you deal with an arrogant person, first look at this. How do you deal with an arrogant person? There's only two ways of dealing with an arrogant person. Either you break down his arrogance or you break down your own arrogance. There's only two ways of dealing with him, right? If you see a tyrant who's arrogant, if you see a ruler who's arrogant, if you see another person who's acting arrogantly in front of you, don't humble yourself in front of him. Imam Ali alayhi salam, He says that in front of the arrogant, be arrogant. When you see an arrogant, but you also be arrogant with him, so that you can break him down. That you can bring him down. You also be standing up to him. Don't just bend down and make him or help him to take advantage of you. No, you also stand in front of him. So you need to break down his arrogance when an arrogant person deals with you. Or the second way of dealing with this is that you break down your own arrogance. And when you break down your own arrogance, that leads to you humbling yourself. And when you start humbling yourself in front of the arrogant, then now you can imagine how far that goes. It goes a long way. That's it. You go down the tube. And when you go down the tube, that's it. My friends, this is exactly what happens. When you deal with Allah, He is mutakabbir. Obviously, you are not going to break His arrogance and His takabbur. So the only way to deal with Allah is to break your takabbur and humble yourself. Realize that you are nothing in front of Him. And declare that. Allah, you are everything, not me. Wow. This is the way to deal with Allah. To stand in front of Allah. To actually go towards Allah. You got to break yourself. Because if you don't break yourself, what will happen? Yes, Allah will break you. One of the easiest way to get broken up by Allah is to be arrogant. This is not amusing to Allah at all when a person is arrogant. When a person has takabbur and arrogance, it is not amusing to Allah at all. In fact, what Allah does to a person like that, He leaves him. He just leaves him. You know what happens when Allah leaves him? Then that person is left at the mercy of his creation. Who's protecting you until now? Allah is protecting you. When Allah leaves someone, now you're at the mercy of His creation. Now His creation, they look at that arrogant person and say, oh, so you stood up before Allah? All right, you know what? Let us deal with you. Let's deal with each other now. Then the earth crushes you. The dirt destroys you. And it has fun destroying you. Why? Because Allah has left you. He says, okay, you're at my mercy now. The only thing that can protect you from that dirt and your grave is Allah. And friends, when a person is arrogant, Allah says, all right, you know what? This is what you're going to be dealt with. I have left you now. You were arrogant. This is what happens when a person is arrogant. And this is the major idea of a pitfall. We need to now learn how to avoid that. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. A pitfall is when you fall unexpectedly. And arrogance is the number one thing that leads to that. Now I'm going to break it down into a list. The reason I'm going to give a list is, again, we are very cunning. Even if you're arrogant, we're not going to admit to it, right? Is there anyone going to admit that, yes, I am arrogant? No one's going to do that. What happens is that we need to have a list to see of all the justifications we can make, and those justifications that we make for ourselves saying that we are good and not arrogant, those need to be pointed out so there's no escape for us. That we can be cornered. That we can now admit that, yes, I have this problem. That I have this issue. And this is the angle that is approaching me with. So that I can eradicate that. Because these are the things that led to the people who fought against Imam Hussein. Everyone who came and fought against Imam Hussein was a person who was Muslim, prayed, and everything. But because of a pitfall, they fell down. And they opposed Imam Hussein. They ended up opposing Imam Hussein. I mean, Shimr. He fought side by side with Imam Hussein. They were in the same battlefield, in the same army, under Imam Ali in the Battle of Siffin. Shimmer was their partner. He was there. He knew exactly who Imam Hussein is. They fought together there. They're in the same army, on the same side, on the same team. Now you see where he ended up. There is, these pitfalls are real. And they can destroy us. And that's what Karbala is teaching us. Imam Hussein is teaching that. Look at these things that can destroy you. Pay attention to them. Because you know what? You don't want to end up being against your Imam. We don't want to end up over there. That will be so sad for us. And it will really go against all the expectation. All the expectation that Bibi Fatima has with us. Because she's expecting a lot from us. And if we let her down by not paying attention to those things that Imam Hussein and Karbala is teaching us, it would be so sad. And that's why we are dealing with this. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Okay. Now when it comes to ego and arrogance, good people and bad people are the same. It just exhibits itself in different ways. In bad people, it exhibits itself in different ways. And in good people, it exhibits itself, it manifests itself in different ways. Ego. Right? It's not that, oh, mashallah, he prays a lot and he fasts a lot and he does so much thing. He's a good person. What does that mean? Is he free from ego? No. He has equal amount of ego, or he has an equal chance of getting ego that an evil person who's drinking at the bar, playing, gambling, and doing all kinds of haram things has. In fact, a little bit more. Because if you see, those people who are doing those evil things have a little bit of humility in them. And at least they say, man, we're nothing. You know, that's good. And here you have this guy who says this. You know, I mean, you ask him, there's no one better than him. In fact, everyone should be judged by my standards. And I judge others by my standards. If you don't fit to what I think is right, then you all are going to hell, or you are munafiq, or something is wrong with you. This is what, where is this coming from? This is arrogance. Good people are bad people are the same. Look at Iblis. He's a prime example that Allah gives of someone who was good, prayed and did everything, and he was so proud of it. What happened to him? He destroyed himself. Allah gave that example so that we can learn from it. So both of these things are the same. Now what happens? How does it come out? How does this ego come out? This arrogance come out? You know, in different ways. Let me say this, right? You will see, we're not arrogant all the time. The arrogance is hidden deep inside. It comes out when we push the right buttons, when situations push the right buttons. What Allah does is that He's going to put you in those situations where the right buttons are pushed. And you get angry and upset, and now that which is hidden inside you has to come out. It comes out in different ways. And you see, when that comes out, there's a different emotion that takes place of you. When someone pushes your buttons, that's when you start saying, I worked hard to get over here, to reach this stage. I built this empire myself. I'm my own man. I built myself. These statements, where did they come from? When Allah puts you and makes you indignant, disrespects you in certain ways and pushes you, so now it comes out. People say this. I built this masjid. I built this community. Okay, whoa, take it easy. You know? Or, for example, they say, do you know who I am? No. Please tell. Who are you? I don't know yet. But it's coming out. Right? Go on. Really, that's what happens. When the right buttons are pushed, that's when your reality comes out. Allah wants it to come out, and that arrogance comes out in this word, in these words. You will see those things, especially when the whole situation is tense and hard. For example, you know, A lot of people's buttons are pushed, you know, when they put themselves in stressful situations, like Hajj. You know, you go for Hajj and you see buttons being pushed. And they're just waiting to take that ihram off. You know, to get at someone there. You know, you got to blame someone for this difficulty I've been through. Can't blame Allah. So let's find the group leader. You know, and all of a sudden it just happens, you know, just blowing up. People just blow up. Why? What happened? You know, they can't accept what happened because it was stressful. The buttons were pushed. Allah does that in life. And then He wants you to see that. It comes out like that. This is a symptom. You need to see that. You know, for example, you know, one time, you know, there was a group. And, you know, I mean, those who have been to Hajj know this, right? You know, they were like waiting to go for the ziyarat in Medina. So the group came out at the appointed time. Everyone was in the bus. And it was very hot outside. And they were sitting in the bus. And everyone got, you know, it was hot. People were like waiting, why aren't we moving, why aren't we moving, why aren't we going here and there? So, you know, people get upset, right? You know what I mean? 5-10 minutes goes by, they get upset and all these things. So, you know, the group is saying, well, the Maulana's not here yet. Okay, now, okay, Maulana's not here, right? So now they wait there. And after about an hour of waiting, finally Maulana comes out. Right? You don't even know the Maulana, so it doesn't matter, right? Just an example I'm giving, right? Maulana comes out there, you know, obviously, and now people are like boiling. They're like really upset because they had to wait for a whole hour in the bus waiting to go. And it was so upset, so now when Maulana does come out over there, so all of a sudden, you know, like someone goes to him, you know, as the spokesman for the rest of the people, because they have to remind him, right? Hey, listen, 1 hour we waited, someone go tell him something. Right? So what happened is that this person goes and tells Maulana, Maulana, we've been waiting for 1 hour and this and that, you know, and people are like, I mean, really, is it fair? Is it fair for them to wait this long, you know, just because, you know, you're taking that time to dress up, you know? And that was it. Right? And then the show began. The show began. And then all of a sudden, all people heard is that, do you know who I am? Do you know who I am? How dare you even say this? All these things. And it's like going on. Let's watch the show. What's happening here? Revelation. Revelation of what? Someone's reality. You want to watch reality, reality? Not reality TV. Reality, reality. That's it. When the buttons are pushed, that's when you watch it. And it all comes out. What is this, my friends? It is arrogance. Showing itself. Wow. Admit it. Yes, I'm sorry. Finished. It's over. My bad. I was wrong. At least do that. It's better. Why is this coming out? Because there's something that's hidden inside of you that's not letting you. Alhamdulillah, it came out right now. Maybe you can realize, wow, what happened just now? Why did I blow up? But you know what? Arrogance doesn't let you admit that. It will make you say that, you know what, these people don't know who I am. They should be respecting us. Why? Now the arrogance goes on. It will now justify it. You know, they should respect ulama. Why? Because we sacrificed all our life and studied in the hausa, eating bread and yogurt. And they should value that. Wow. What do you want from them? What do you want from them? Who did you do it for? Really, who did you do it for? The issue that happened, it just comes out. Wow. My friends, ego does, you know, is a disease that is not selective. It goes to everyone, good or bad. And it exhibits itself in different ways. That's why when we look at these things, we need to be aware of what these things are before we get into it. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. You know, symptoms. Let me give you a symptom of arrogance that you don't know. But there are other symptoms also, but this is not my speech. I just want to give it to you so you understand arrogance. You know, let me give you a symptom of arrogance. How do you know this person is arrogant? For example, right? How do you know this person is arrogant? One symptom of arrogance. What does arrogance do to you? It makes you generous. Arrogance makes you generous. Generosity. One of the ways generosity comes is through arrogance. You take care of people. You give to people. You help people. Why are you helping people? Why are you helping people? Well, I help the people. I want to be known as a philanthropist. You know, that's one way of gaining respect amongst the people. See, it makes you give more so that a foundation can be named after you. You know, and hence that's one step closer to being God. And hence we like to play God. And Allah is asking, wow, what are you giving for? You see, when you give, what are you giving for? What's the purpose of giving? The whole purpose, my friends, Allah is, when you look at it, you can't play around with Allah. You know, you can't buy yourself into heaven or get Allah's closeness out of that. These are people who will help others in order that these others now are obligated towards them or feel that they have to respect them. This is a way. Arrogance makes you do that. My friends, giving is not a good deed. Giving for the right reason is a good deed. Giving for the right reason is a good deed. You're just feeding your arrogance when you give like that. When those people give like that. That's not helping you. Allah is saying your whole purpose of life is to meet me and to get ready for that appointment. Don't you see that? Our whole life, all of mankind is waiting for what? To meet their Creator. One day you're going to stand before your Creator and you're going to see Him eye to eye and you are going to be standing in front of Him. And when you stand in front of Him, what will happen? Are you ready for that appointment? It's like you are going to your lawyer's appointment and if you just show up there, he says, okay, did you bring the paperwork? He said, what paperwork? About the case, what case? He says, why did you even come here? You're not ready. Are you ready to meet Him? First, become a human being so that you can meet your Creator. The whole idea of doing good is to become a human being. If it's taking you away from being a human being, that's not a good deed. That's just feeding your arrogance. Humility is what makes you a human being. Humbleness is what makes you a human being. And this is what we need to understand here. Subhanallah. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Okay, you know, I mean, again, I'm going to give the list later, but let me now make it more personal for us, right? Let's see. How do you know you have arrogance? Right? I'll give you some methods. If you want to practice it, go ahead, practice it, experiment on yourself, right? You know, I mean, again, with a warning, right, that these are risky, do not do it at home, right? Experiments you can try on yourself to see if you are arrogant or not. If you have takabbur in you, if you have this disease in you, that's going to be a pitfall for you. How would you know that? All right, very well. Are you ready to listen to that? And just, you think about it, I'll just give you the scenarios. And you think about it and see whether I'm going to react in the way that I'm talking about. Otherwise, mashallah, you are a good person. Right? So, here we go. Are you ready? Yeah. I just wrote down a few, right? Few experiments that you can try on yourself to see that. Okay. How do you know you have an ego? That's the question, right? How do you know you have an ego? Number one, instead of Ziyarat-e-Ashura, read Ziyarat-e-Jamia. Instead of Ziyarat-e-Ashura, read Ziyarat-e-Jamia. Ziyarat-e-Ashura, 10 minutes. Ziyarat-e-Jamia, 40 minutes. Right? And then when Ziyarat-e-Jamia is going on, and if you are getting tired, then ask yourself, that's it? I'm tired of the dhikr of Ahlul Bayt so fast? See that? I mean, one day, for example, tomorrow, let's put on Ziyarat-e-Jamia and see how many people get upset. I watched this, 40 minutes, it's dinner time. Dinner's getting cold. Don't worry, they have ovens back there. They'll keep it warm for you. You know, we're still, see, upset. People are upset. Why are you upset for? Why are you upset for? Is there something wrong happening here? Isn't this also a ziyarat of Ahlul Bayt? My friends, just a little bit change. You see, people, look at yourself. And then recognize yourself. I'm not saying you have arrogance. Alhamdulillah, you're good people, right? I'm saying to myself, right? Experiments that you can do to see if you have ego in you. Number two, right? Instead of the Maulana who leads the prayer really fast and express, get one Maulana who takes his time. And then see how many people complain. So what is this? We've been there for half an hour praying. Bro, you were praying half an hour. Isn't that good? But still, half an hour. See, people get upset. If you get upset, if you get bothered, why are you bothered of prayer? Hey, look at yourself. Experiment. Right? And see if this happens or not, right? There you go. You know, I mean, I'm just giving you, you know, experiments that you can do to see if you have ego, and then you answer it for yourself. All right, number three, you know, I just wrote these things down, you know. Instead of Noha in Urdu, stay in English. See how many people get upset. See, that just simple, you know, I mean, look at it. This is in English. What happened? Isn't that the zikr of Imam Hussein? But still, it's in English. What happens? Understand it. How many people get bothered by it? Why are you getting bothered by the zikr of Imam Hussein? I'm just giving an example, any language for that matter. Chinese. You know? Why are you getting bothered when the zikr of Imam Hussein is going on? Right? You should be attracted to that. This bother, this thing in your heart that makes you upset. Where is it coming from? What is the source of that? See, these are things that when you look at yourself, I'm sorry, this is how you see yourself, whether you are in that boat or not, that's going to drown. And these are things that we need to make sure. And I'm saying these things from hadith, right? I'm just giving examples of that. You know, in hadith we have, one of the ways to destroy your ego is extend your sajda. Extend your sajda. When you go in sajda, in prostration, extend it. Make it longer. Make it longer. Do more of it. You know, do more of it. Allah knows what He was doing with us when He was making us do sajda. Have you even thought about it? And I'm saying this just so that we can think. But have you seen our posture in sajda? Isn't it embarrassing? Really? I want you to see this. And then recognize how Allah is getting rid of our ego. How Allah is making us think, now see yourself. And then when you recognize yourself, maybe you can think, yes, Allah, you are great, not me. Then you can say, Allahu Akbar, in the real sense of the word. This is how it is. La ilaha illallah. You know, my friends, really, one last thing I'll mention, and that's it for today, right? We'll mention that. One of the ways to remove ego is istighfar. Istighfar. Maybe, let me explain it in a way that you don't know it, how it is, right? And you'll be surprised, right? You know, istighfar, you know what that means, right? Asking Allah for forgiveness for our sins, right? That's what it means. What it means by that, let me just give a story, then explain it, and you might get surprised at Allah and our relationship with Allah and what it actually means. Let's say the loud salawats. You know, a person, you know, have you heard about Ayatollah Behjat? This is a story from him, right? Siddur that happened with him, right? This Ayatollah Behjat was one of the Maraje, you know, he passed away. a person who was very humble, right? Very humble person, you know, someone who's very close to Allah, you can say, right? So after one of his prayers, a person who really wanted to get an answer, you know, right away after he prayed, while he was doing the zikr, went up to him and said, you know, I have a question. And this was a youngster, right? A youngster, not too religious, you know, just outside. I mean, he just came there, heard about him, and he just came there. He says, you know, listen, I need to get an answer, right? And he asked the question, how do I stop myself from sinning? How do I stop myself from sinning? I sin too much. You know, and now he's asking it openly, you know, clearly. Now the people behind him, right, they're saying, what are you doing? He's doing zikr right now, taqibat, you know, just relax. You know, I need to know the answer, right? Okay, well, 1 minute, relax, you know. You'll get the answer and all these things, right? So then what happened is that after the zikr was over, so Sulah Behjat, you know, he turned towards him. He says, you know, how do I stop myself from sinning all the time? So Azhar Bahjat gave him some advice. He says, you know, you should pay more attention to Allah and focus on your relationship with Allah and this and that, right? So as he said that, he says, no, I can't do that. I can't do that. Give me another way. Give me some other way of doing it, right? Like, you know, and then, you know, I mean, Azhar Bahjat, you know, after he used to pray, he used to walk home, right? And everyone used to follow him. Because, you know, Azhar Bahjat was unique in that sense that, you know, he hardly spoke. But whenever he spoke, it was a treasure. And everyone wanted to be there to hear it. Right? So there would be a huge following that goes behind him just to see if he says something, right? So they went behind him, and this person did not give up. This youngster. He was constantly asking him, I didn't get an answer. I didn't get an answer, and I won't leave without an answer today. I need an answer. What can I do to stop from sinning? What can I do to stop from sinning, you know? I sin too much. It's like overtaking me. And he's going on explaining it, right? Like, so the other ulama there, the ulama behind, right? They're saying that, listen, leave him alone, we'll answer you. He says, listen, I didn't come to meet you. If I need an answer from you, you know what, I would have come to you. But I didn't, I came to him. And I need the answer from him. I heard about him, right? Okay. What happened is that, you know, they went further all the way to his house, and he was asking again, and Ayatollah was not replying. He was giving the same answers. He was giving, you know, pay more attention, make more dua, you know, do all these things. He said, listen, those things don't work with me. I know myself, those things don't work with me. I need an answer. Understand this, my friends, and understand it with the way that it's supposed to be understood, right? So Ayatollah Behjat invited him into the house. He said, all right, you know, why don't you come inside? So he went inside the house. Now everyone's outside the house waiting, right? So now they're saying, okay, what's going on behind closed doors? What is this, right? So after a while, this person comes out and starts walking. He says, hey, wait a minute. What happened in there? What did he say? You know, he said, well, again, he started giving me the same advice about, you know, praying and doing dua and fasting and all these things. I said, those things don't work. I don't do those things. I can't do those things. I know myself. Need advice. At the end, you know, and he said the advice, you know, that he said. He said, what is that? Understand this very well, my friends. He says, all right, he told me that after every sin, do istighfar. Every time you sin, just do istighfar. Say astaghfirullah. Every time you sin. He said, yeah, I can do that. I can do that. And you know what? That was it. My friends, here's the deal. You know, sin, guna, has a power in it to take us down. Right? To take us down. To hurt us. Istighfar has a power to build us up. If you put these two powers together, istighfar will eventually win. This is how tarbiyat happens in Islam. You can't expect this guy to be like Abu Zar and Salman on the first night. He's somewhere, and he needs a force that can pull him. Istighfar has the force that when a person is doing this, it can pull them slowly and slowly until that light that is in Allah and istighfar can take over his life. Understand how Islam works. Why is istighfar so easy? Allah made it. Why is it so easy? My friends, really, know how long I've been speaking for, I am not paying attention, right? But here's why. Allah made it so easy. And people are like, you know, we don't hear these things, right? So that how Allah made it so easy for us to come over this way. But you know why? Because here's the thing. When there is, in Akhir al-Zaman, when there is sifting going on, there's always movement from Haq to Batil and Batil to Haq. People are moving around. There has to be people who are on that side that have to come to this side. And there has to be people who are on this side that have to end up on that side. That sifting has to take place. Or in the words of Hadith, gharbal. Gharbal has to take place, the sifting. When you sift something and you take the good out of the bad, that has to take place before the truth can really come. So what happens is that when that sifting happens, those people have to end up here, and these people have to go there. And if we make it hard for people to come inside the doors, if we make it hard on people to come over here and actually learn and be a part of this, then people will run away being scared. Allah made it open so that it's easy to come this way. That's why whenever you see a sifting happen like that which happened in Karbala, those that were coming from that side here, how easy did Imam Hussein make it? How easy did he make it? Criminals. Criminals. You know, Abbas went there. Abbas went there in front of the army and gave a speech. He asked Imam Hussein, let me tell them something. Hazrat Abbas gave a speech in Karbala. And when he gave a speech there in Karbala, you know what he said? That, you know, really, Hussein, you don't know him. He's very kind. He's very merciful. He's very compassionate. Hussein is willing to let go of your mistakes. Hussein is willing to let go of your mistakes. Come to him. Don't do this. Come to him. He's still willing. After all that which happened there, Hussein is still willing to do that for you. Friends, really, after Ali Akbar was killed, Hussein, are you still willing to forgive them? How? What does a person have to do? Really, what does a person have to do to be on the bad side? Hussein made it so hard, so easy. My friends, if you don't know Imam Hussein has a very kind heart. In fact, he is so kind-hearted that he is looking for a way to help someone get out. He's looking for a way to forgive his enemies. He's saying, give me any way, I will help you. I am still the master of heaven. Let me help you all. Hussein, these people don't deserve it. Really don't deserve it. They don't deserve any kindness from you. Don't you see what they have done to you? But still, Imam Hussein is saying, let them come. Let them come. So what is this? Really, when you ask the whole situation, when you look at what happened there and how kind Imam Hussein is, and especially when it comes to children, Imam Hussein is very kind. When it comes to orphans and yatim, I mean, there's nothing like Imam Hussein. Imam Hussein just kills himself for them. He kills himself for them. You know, when Imam Hussein was being buried, when his body was being laid to rest, and Bani Asad were there to bury him, and Imam Sajjad had come, by Allah's will, to bury Imam Hussein, his father. Now obviously it's hard for Imam Sajjad. Imam Sajjad has ilmul ghaib also, and hence knowledge is in front of his eyes. He knows. When he was burying Imam Hussein, he saw each and every injury on his body. Every injury has a history. Imam Sajjad was looking at those injuries. In fact, Imam Hussein's body was injured in such a way that it was unrecognizable. You know the way that they came to Imam Hussein? These people were inhumane, low lives. They had no morals at all. When they came to Imam Hussein, they had no mercy on him. They pounced on him like an animal. It is said that when Bibi Zainab came out to the hill, all she saw was a group of people in a circle and swords going up and down. Swords are going up and down, and that's what she saw there. In fact, it is said that Imam Hussein had so many injuries on his body, so many injuries on his body, that there was no place to strike him anymore. So the soldier said that we were looking because we all wanted sawab of hitting him or hurting him. We wanted the reward of hurting him, so we went there. After, there was a group of soldiers that would go and thrust their spears into Imam Hussein. Then they would move back and another group would go forward to do that. So they can all get their ajr of doing that for Imam Hussein, to doing that to Imam Hussein. So as they were doing that to Imam Hussein, this is what they said. We saw that there's no room to hit him. So what we did is that we are taking out the old arrows so we can put new ones in there. This son of Fatima was not just killed in a decent way, my friends. Imam Hussein was killed very hardly. It is very bad. He was killed in a very bad way. You know, and the spear, you know, I mean, really, the spear, how it works is this. Let me show you how a spear works. The mechanism of how a spear is made is that it's made to go inside and not come out. That's what it's made for. When you stick a spear inside, the only humane way to deal with a spear that's inside the body is to take it out from the other side. Not to pull it out. Not to pull it out, because that would be so inhumane that you thrust a spear inside and pull it out. You know what they were doing with Imam Hussein? They were thrusting the spear inside and they were pulling it out. And as they pulled it out, the body of Imam Hussein will be pulled from one side to the other. So many wounds were found on his body that when Imam Sajjad was putting him in the ground, every wound was shedding new tears for him. Every wound was shedding more tears. Imagine, his heart is being broken and broken into pieces. What have they done to you, Father? What have they done to you to make you like this? And as Imam Sajjad was putting in the body in the ground, the Bani Asad were there also. And they were helping Imam Hussein. Bani Asad, who were the locals there, were helping Imam Hussein. And Bani Asad noted the wounds on Imam Hussein's body. And they saw that all the wounds are new. They were just a few days old. But there are two wounds that Imam Hussein had that were not new. He had two wounds on his back that they were not new, they were old. they looked at that and asked Imam Sajjad that, you know, we understand these wounds that are on the body that are new, but what about those two wounds that were old in his back? Why did he have those two wounds over there? Where did they come from? When Imam Sajjad heard that, imagine, really, all the things he's thinking about right now. But in spite of that, he answered back and he said, you know, my father loved orphans so much, he used to take bread for them on his back. Every night he would take bread for them. He would take food for them. Every night he would make sure that they're fed. Every night he would make sure that they're taken care of. These two wounds are from the bags he used to carry on his back.
سَأَلَمُ الَّذِينَ ظَلَمُوا أَيَّ مُنْقَلَبٍ يَنْقَلَبُونَ يا محمود بحق محمد يا الله بحق علي يا فاطر السماوات بحق فاطمة يا محسن بحق حسن يا قديم الأحسان بحق حسين. Allah, give us a tawfiq to be on the right path. Give us the wisdom to understand your guidance. Hasten the reappearance of our Imam. Make us his helper when he comes. Wa akhiru da'wana anilhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Ya Hussein.
Ya Hussein, 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 see him one last time. Zainab, run to him. Zainab, run to him. Zainab, run to him. See him one last time. What a wondrous scene. A flower in the plain. My looted Lord Hussein lying there to die. A flower in the plain. My wounded Lord Hussein, lying there to die, lying there to die. Nothing does he see but his grandfather, his heavenly mother. Come here to our side. Zainab, run to him. Zainab, run to him. Zainab, run to him. See him one last time. Zainab, run to him. Zainab, run to him. Zainab, run to him. See him one last time. The blood upon his face, the blood upon his neck, all still better than what will happen next. Soldiers crowding round, pointing to his throat. The Imam of his time, he lies upon the ground. The blood upon his face, the blood upon his neck, all still better than what will happen next. Soldiers crowding round, pointing to his throat. The Imam of his time, he lies upon the ground. Zainab, run to him. Zainab, run to him. Zainab, run to him. See him one last time. Zainab, run to him. Zainab, run to him. Zainab, run to him. See him one last time. The dust upon your eyes, the feeling in your throat, the desperate children's cries, the screaming of women. But all within your mind is calling for Hussein. Your brother is in pain. And you must fly to him, the dust upon your eyes, the feeling in your throat, the desperate children's cries, the screaming of women, but all within your mind is calling for Hussein. Your brother is in pain, and you must fly to him. Zainab, run to him. Zainab, run to him. Zainab, run to him. See him one last time. Zainab, run to him. Zainab, run to him. Zainab, run to him. See him one last time. Sakina at your feet, you look into her eyes. Does she realize what will now occur? The greatest of mankind will meet the cruelest end, along with his loyal friends. And who will now guard her? Sakina at your feet, you look into her eyes. Does she realize what will now occur? The greatest of mankind will meet the cruelest end, along with his loyal friends. And who will now guard her? Zainab, run to him. Zainab, run to him. Zainab, run to him. See him one last time. Zainab, run to him. Zainab, run to him. Zainab, run to him. See him one last time. Like a lioness worries for its young, you gaze from on a hill. Your body's cold with stress. That body, is it his? That screaming, is it yours? You see his arms and chest not moving anymore. Like a lioness worries for its young, you gaze from on a hill. Your body's cold with stress. That body, is it his? That screaming, is it yours? You see his arms and chest not moving anymore. Two orphans on a plane, God knows how hurt they are. Just Zainab and Hussein, so close but still so far. Two orphans on a plane, God knows how hurt they are. Just Zainab and Hussein, so close but still so far. Zainab, run to him. Zainab, run to him. Zainab, run to him. See him one last time. Zainab, run to him. Zainab, run to him. Zainab, run to him. See him one last time. Zainab, run to him. Zainab, run to him. Zainab, run to him. See him one last time.
ये कहते थे शहे वाला सकीना हम नहीं होंगे
सकीना हम नहीं होंगे सकीना हम नहीं होंगे
सताए सकीना हम नहीं होंगे
सकीना हम नहीं होंगे सकीना हम नहीं होंगे सकीना हम नहीं होंगे सकीना हम नहीं होंगे
उठो सीने से लग जाओ के हम मरने को जाते हैं
उठो सीने से लग जाओ के हम मरने को जाते हैं
अभी एक हश्र सा होगा
अभी एक हश्र सा होगा
सकीना हम नहीं होंगे
सकीना हम नहीं
के लिए क کون آئے گا بھر کے ہوئے شولے جلے گا جس گھڑی خیمہ سکینہ ہم نہیں ہوں گے
سکینہ ہم نہیں ہوں گے سکینہ ہم نہیں ہوں گے
حرام کے سر سے چھینی جائے گی چادر سر مختل یہ ظلم ناروا ہوگا سکینہ ہم نہیں ہوں گے
سکینہ
ہم نہیں ہوں گے
سکینہ ہم نہیں ہوں گے
اگر نیند آئے تو عابد کے سینے پر ہی سو جانا ہمیں تو بھول ہی جانا سکینہ ہم نہیں ہوں گے
سکینہ ہم نہیں ہوں گے سکینہ ہم نہیں ہوں گے
اگر نانا کی امت سے تمہیں صدمہ کوئی پہنچے نہ دیکھو بد دعا دینا سکینہ ہم نہیں ہوں گے
سکینہ ہم نہیں ہوں گے سکینہ ہم نہیں ہوں گے سکینہ ہم نہیں ہوں گے حسین
السلام علیکم یا رسول اللہ السلام علیکم یا حبیب اللہ یا خیر خلق اللہ السلام علیکم یا نبی اللہ ورحمۃ اللہ وبرکاتہ السلام علیکم یا ابا عبد اللہ وعلی الارواح التي حلت بفنائك عليك مني سلام الله ابدا ما بقيت وبقي الليل والنهار ولا جعله الله آخر العهد مني لزيارتكم السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين جميعا ورحمة الله وبركاته السلام علیک یا صاحب الاسر والزمان السلام علیک یا امامنا و امام انس والجان السلام علیک یا شریک القرآن السلام علیک یا مظہر الایمان اجل اللہ تعالی فرجک وسہل اللہ تعالی مخرجک وظہورک السلام علیکم جميع المعصومین ورحمۃ اللہ وبرکاتہ